Hello, friends, and welcome to the Everyday Truth Podcast with Kurt Skelly. Our purpose is to show that the Bible, it's relevant to your life every day. And we're glad you joined us for the conversation as we explore the Gospel of Luke and discover the facts behind our faith. Now, let's hear what Kurt has to say.
And welcome back, my friends, to today's episode of Everyday Truth. Appreciate your faithfulness. Hey, I appreciate your faithfulness to Everyday Truth Live, which we're doing on Facebook, at least at the time of this recording. We're still doing it at 10 a.m. on weekdays on Facebook. If you've not gone there yet, boy, we're enjoying our time. It's a video version of this, not the same book, a different Bible study altogether. I'd love to invite you to be my guest for that. Not only do we learn the Bible, but we are introduced to a different coffee mug every single day. It doesn't get much better than that. Hey, we're in Luke chapter 22 and verse 39. Jesus has been in the upper room dealing with some pettiness, teaching some important lessons to the disciples about leadership, instituting the Lord's Supper, washing feet. I mean, just a whole lot's been going on.
Yeah, there's been a lot of teaching there, both by his words and by his actions.
If you were to go to Israel with me, and I would hope that one day you could put that on your bucket list and go, I'd love to take you. The upper room, we don't know exactly where it is. They'll take you to a place and call it the upper room. It most certainly was not, but they love to do that and say, this was the spot.
Right, right.
But it probably was in that general vicinity. And so if it were, the walk from the upper room to the Garden of Gethsemane was a little bit of a hike, mm-hmm. mostly downhill. You'd have to cross the Kidron Valley and then make your way back up to the ascent of the Mount of Olives. So the Garden of Gethsemane is at the lower ascent of the Mount of Olives. When I say Mount of Olives, my friends, don't think of like a mountain like Mount Everest or one of the Rocky Mountains, but it's a hill.
Yeah.
It's a hill that you can climb and have climbed. Josh, you've walked it with me.
Yep.
Look at verse 39. So he came out and went, and as he was wont, in other words, as he was accustomed to, he went out to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples also followed him. So they're making this walk, and on the walk, they're having a talk. I do want to say that the last thing they do after, I can't remember if it was in the upper room or on the way or at the garden itself. I think it was in the upper room. They sang in hymn.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yep. Before they went out.
I think it was before going out. And what's interesting is the hymn they sang would have been the Hallel Psalms, Psalm 113 to 118. Psalm 118. Boy, my friends, if you read that psalm, wow. Because it's that psalm that says the stone which the builders rejected has become the head of the corner. Mm-hmm. So that psalm is about the rejection of Christ.
Yeah.
It's the last song he sang.
Wow.
And then right after that prophecy about his rejection, it says, this is the day that the Lord hath made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. We know that song. This is the day that the Lord hath made. Well, that day is the day of crucifixion. Mm. Because a Jewish day was the evening and the morning.
Right.
So by 9 o'clock in the morning, Jesus will be on the cross. So when the Bible predicts that they're going to reject the stone, that's Jesus, the stone here. Matter of fact, Jesus references this in Matthew 21.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus said that this is me. He's talking about the day of his crucifixion. Mm-hmm. And yet what does the Bible say? We will rejoice and be glad in it.
Yeah. That's an amazing teaching.
It's amazing.
That's a tough thing to do, to know that you're going to your death, but we're going to rejoice in this day.
So the same God that said, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations, lived it.
He did it. Yeah.
Yeah. For the joy that was set before him.
Yeah.
So he had joy on Calvary's day because he knew what he was accomplishing and where he was going.
Yeah. And I think to that point, you know, as you pointed out in verse 39, he came out and he went as he was wont. So this is something he wasn't trying to run from it. He knew what was about to happen. He knew where they were going to find. He was just doing. He knew that they would know what
he
what
knew.
He was doing.
Judas had left.
Yes,
he had already said to Judas, "What, whatever you're doing, just do it quickly.
Yeah,
you know, get the job done." He welcomed it.
Yeah.
He's not going to go to a different spot. He knows that Judas is going to know where they're going.
Right, right.
All of it.
Yeah.
Look at verse 40. And when he was at the place, so the spot to which he went on the Mount of Olives, the Garden of Gethsemane, he said unto them, pray that ye enter not into temptation. And he was withdrawn from them about a stone's cast and kneeled down and prayed, saying, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. So Josh, when you went to Gethsemane with me and we had that service in the Garden of Gethsemane, did we take time to explain what the word Gethsemane meant?
I don't remember.
So Gethsemane means the olive press.
Mm. Yeah, we did. We talked about this.
The olive press, place of the olive press. The olive press was the machine by which the olive would yield all of its liquid, everything that was valuable, every drop. It was a place of pressure.
Yeah.
And isn't it interesting that Jesus prayed there in Gethsemane and sweat, as it were, great drops of blood?
Yeah.
The pressure, the weight, literally, we talk about the weight of the world. We know nothing of the weight of the world.
Right, right.
Jesus suffered the weight of the world.
Yeah, yeah, he knew all about it. And, you know, we see as he's here in Gethsemane, and I don't guess we'll get to it today, but you mentioned the sweat, the drops of blood that he sweat. I mean, literally, you know, he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders. He's getting ready to go and give himself for the sins of the entire world. I remember being there in Gethsemane. There were so many moving parts of that trip, but I would say was probably the most moving part of
it was
of the
for
trip.
Me.
Yeah.
My first time to Israel, I said to everybody, Garden of Gethsemane, number one.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, because you know what took place right there in that garden. But yeah, it's an incredible place to be.
So Jesus goes there, and this passage, Luke's passage, doesn't give us as many details as some of the others, Matthew in particular, chapter 26. But in the parallel passages, you find that Jesus leaves the eight out at a more remote spot, and then takes the three, Peter, James, and John, and then, guys, can you watch with me for this hour? And then he goes a little bit farther, and the Bible says here, stones cast, comes back, they're sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And three times he tells them, watch and pray that you enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. And really, isn't that what Peter had just done?
Yeah.
Peter said, oh, I'm willing.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't a matter of willpower. Willpower is not enough.
Right.
Well, I'm going to stop sinning. I'm going to stop smoking. I'm going to stop you filling your blank.
Yeah.
Willpower is not enough. When Jesus was teaching them a lesson here to say, guys, be vigilant, be dependent. That's what prayer is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be vigilant, be dependent. But you know what they did? They gave way to the flesh. They went to sleep instead of seeing the need for God's power and God's strength and God's wisdom and all of what only God could give.
Yeah, and where do we get all that, or where do we find all that? We find that in our communication with God, which is prayer. And I think that's why this is such an, you know, this last two episodes, when we talked about Jesus praying for the disciples and praying for Peter, that, you know, they weren't split up and that they didn't have the dissension amongst them. We see just the power of prayer in this whole passage, where Jesus says, I'm praying for you, and hey guys, now, hey, pray that you enter not into temptation.
And think about that, though, Josh, that you enter not into temptation. In other words, if you'll spend a little bit of proactive time right now, just keeping your eyes open and communicating with me, you're going to save yourself some future hurt.
Mm.
That you enter not into this trouble.
Yeah,
but what happened is they didn't watch and pray.
Right.
And they entered into trouble. They forsook him and fled. And there was all kinds of angst and fear and all of that that was unnecessary had they trusted and prayed and received that strength. Because one thing we know is that Jesus watched and prayed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what did Jesus receive that night? Strength.
Yeah.
Because he was about to enter into troublous time, but he didn't enter into it in the sense of being swallowed by it.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think there's a great lesson here for us about prayer and how important prayer is for us today as well. Because how do we overcome temptation? We overcome temptation by asking for wisdom, by praying, by asking God to help us. Because as you said a couple minutes ago, willpower is not enough. I can will all that I want. Oh, I'm not going to do that again. Oh, I'm not going to go there. Oh, I'm not going to look at that. But my willpower and your willpower is not enough. It's God's strength in me. How do I get that? I get that by asking him for it. I get that by praying to him.
I forget which author it was that said, no prayer, no power.
Mm-hmm.
Little prayer, little power.
Yeah.
Much prayer, much power.
Yeah.
And they're so true.
Yeah.
And in the midst of this prayer, and Jesus prayed for hours, at least 3 hours, but it seems as if the theme of his prayer is what was recorded here, and that is, Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me, this cup of suffering,
mm-hmm.
this cup of condemnation. If there's any other way for the accomplishment of the salvation of the world, let it happen.
Yeah.
Of course, Jesus is speaking in his humanity,
right.
all God, all right. man.
Yeah.
And of course, there was no other way. So Jesus demonstrated the greatest example of servant submission in the history of the world when he said, not my will, but thine be done.
Yeah.
Prayer is the place where we give our will to God.
Yeah, and Jesus certainly did that. And, you know, I think what Jesus was more concerned about here, even than his physical suffering, which was a concern of his. I mean, he was 100% man, 100% God. But I think what he was more concerned about here was the separation, the temporary separation that he's going to get ready to experience.
Even understand that?
Right, yeah.
How can God be separated from God?
Right.
How, I mean, it's unfathomable.
Mm-hmm.
We'll never comprehend our salvation
and
the cost, the price. Yeah. How can we?
Right. But when you think about that and think about our inability to understand that, it should motivate us all the more to live for him who gave everything for us.
There appeared an angel unto him from heaven, strengthening him. And being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly. His sweat was, as it were, great drops of blood. This is actually a rare medical mm-hmm. condition, falling down to the ground. And when he rose up from prayer and was come to his disciples, he found them sleeping for sorrow. They're depressed. And sometimes in depression, you eat and sleep, right?
Yeah.
Verse 46, and he said unto them, why sleep ye? Rise and pray, lest ye enter into temptation. Luke says it once here. If you look at the parallel passages, this is repeated a couple of times, but it really just speaks to what we just said.
Mm-hmm.
Because in just a moment, troubles are coming.
Yeah. Yep. It's getting ready to get real bad.
Judas is already on the way.
Yeah.
This is happening right now. He's already met with them. They've reconnoitered the temple troop, the temple guard.
Mm-hmm.
They have their henchmen. They've got their lanterns and their swords, and they're coming.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
And Jesus is warning, and they're sleeping.
Yeah.
How often, and we'll close with this, Josh, but how often in the New Testament does God use the metaphor of sleep?
Yeah.
For, man, wake up. Awake thou that sleepest.
Mm-hmm.
Christ shall give thee light. Now it's high time to awake out of sleep. Now is your salvation near. The night is far spent. The day is at hand. Let's cast off the works of darkness. Put on the armor of light. It's like, wake up, wake up, wake up.
Yeah. Yeah. The implication of all of that is the message that we have and the things that we live for are important, and we have very little time. And so we have a responsibility to get the message out there and use the time, redeeming the time, because the days are evil.
So wake up, my friends. Wake up. Some of you might fall asleep during this podcast. But hey, let's be alert. Let's be dependent, praying, asking, relying, and let's see God use our lives for His will, not ours. God bless you, my friends. Have a great day in the Lord.
Thanks for taking time to listen. If everyday truth matters to you, go ahead and subscribe to the podcast or share it with a friend. Until next time, God bless.